Welcome to the HSP podcast. I'm Julie Bieland, and as an HSP psychotherapist and founder of Sensitive Empowerment, I'm excited to share this podcast with you. My mission is to teach you how to balance and honor your sensitive nervous system, understand your incredible value, love who you are, and empower you to flourish in your full potential. I love featuring highly sensitive people worldwide to bring unique perspectives that shed light on what it's like to experience life as an HSP. By exploring high sensitivity from different angles, I hope to create a sense of normalization and validation that supports your journey. To further your understanding of high sensitivity, I invite you to explore all our episodes and discover tools in my online courses to help HSPs overcome the challenges of living in a world not set up for our levels of sensitivity. That way, you can fully embrace the many gifts that come with this trait. For more information, visit sensitiveconnection.com. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello and welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for our event today, helping young adult highly sensitives to through their times of important times of transition. I'm Andrea Weber, and today we are recording live from the Sensitive Empowerment Community, which offers a positive alternative to social media for sensitive people. And you can find us at sensitivecommunity.com. Carolina Mariposa is a licensed psychotherapist and medical intuitive who specializes in working with highly sensitive children, teens, and parents. And she's very passionate about teaching highly sensitive people to connect to their innate wisdom so that they can feel more grounded, joyful, creative, and empowered. And she's also mum to a sensitive and empathic child. Now, Carolina is endorsed in California as an early childhood mental health specialist, but she loves supporting children of all ages and also collaborating with those who see parenthood as an opportunity for personal and spiritual growth. So welcome, Carolina. Thank you so much for being our guest for today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I'll just add, my daughter, who you mentioned, is 4, but I also am an auntie and a godparent and a mentor to a number of youth in this age group that we're going to be talking about today. And I also have clients in this age group. So I'm right there with those of you who are listening, and I'm excited to talk about it today.
That is wonderful. And I can certainly relate to this topic as well. My own daughter finished high school last year. So she's in that time of transition of wondering what's next. And she's still living at home at the moment. And we've had all of those discussions that I'm sure many people listening can relate to. So I guess before we get started talking about some of the challenges, if we could go through perhaps what are some of these main times of transitions for children around this age? Well, young adults, they're not children anymore, they're young adults. So what are some of these main times that we're talking about here?
Well, the most common one for a lot of people is the launch to college, so leaving home and going off to college. But there are a lot of other ways that youth transition at this age. Some of them stay home, like your daughter, and go to school from home. Some do vocational training programs. Some decide to go to work or take a gap year. So there's a lot of ways that they are going out into the world, not just college, which I like to mention because a lot of times people think first of college, but that doesn't always, it's not always the path that all young people take.
And I guess that's very true too, because most people think of that. They think of study, and I guess that's what kids are geared to do from school. They're geared into, well, I must continue on with my study. But of course, these days, a lot of young people don't take that path. They might take, you know, a gap year, or they might travel. They might try and look for work. You know, do they stay at home while they're doing these things? Do they move out? Do they take that next step? Sometimes they're in a relationship already and may have been in a relationship for some time. And, you know, we have those conversations about, is it the best idea for the two of you to be moving in together straight away? And all of those interesting conversations, it's that there's just so much going on, I think, at that time. And I had a recent experience. It's not it was a temporary situation, so not a permanent time of transition at all. But recently my daughter and I had the experience where I had to go home and be with my parents for a little while. And we both realized that it was the first time that my daughter had been at home pretty much by herself for the most part. And the things that we found ourselves discussing that we'd never had to have conversations around before. And as a parent, you know, all the what if scenarios come in. And so I think I ended up unintentionally overwhelming her a little bit, because I wanted to make sure that if this happened, that, you know, she was going to be okay, because I was sort of a little bit out of range for sort of contact. I couldn't be contacted all the time where I was. And so, you know, if there's an electrical storm, what do you do with the switches in the switch box? If the grey water pump burns out, what happens? What do you do with valves and taps? And I realised that there was just all these things that we'd never had to discuss before. So yeah, that was interesting to go through that experience where she'd never been without a parent before. So that was pretty challenging to work through that. And it was an eye-opener for me too, because it made me think of all the things that we're talking about. Right. So during these times, Carolina, what do you see are the major challenges that, especially, I guess, for highly sensitive young adults?
Well, any big transition is going to have challenges for everybody, because big transitions challenge our typical ways of operating. If your child, as a young person, a younger person, had challenges during just small transitions, a lot of sensitive kids have trouble, for example, just switching from one activity to another. As they get older and they go into these really huge life transitions, it's good to anticipate with them that they're going to feel off center and off balance as they go into this phase. And it's a lot of the logistics that you talk about are new for them to learn, but they're also in this really exciting time of stepping into the world in a new way. So energetically, and in some cases spiritually, they're just becoming more of themselves. They're finding their mission in the world. So that's an opportunity, but it's also it can be a time of self-doubt and questioning and wondering, if I really love this thing, is that really my passion? Is that what I'm meant to do? So those kind of big transitions have big questions that come along with all those little logistics that you were talking about that you went through with your daughter. And oftentimes HSPs especially, we like predictability. We like our routines. And so if we are starting a new routine, even if we're still living at home as a young person, but instead of going to school, we're going to a job, or if we are in a new roommate situation and we have to navigate living with new people, all of those things are going to throw us off and be things that we have to adjust to. And because highly sensitive people process so deeply, it's going to be more tiring for those young people. It's going to take more energy and effort to really integrate all the new information. It might take more time to feel grounded and comfortable in the new life or the new setting or the new routine. And the good news is that you can normalize this and anticipate this with your highly sensitive youth. So you can have these conversations like you were having with your daughter, not only about the logistics, but hopefully also about all the exciting opportunities they're going to encounter, all the things they're going to learn, and what lights them up inside. So it's an opportunity to find new things out about your highly sensitive youth that they might not have even found out about themselves yet until they get into this new environment or this new routine that just sparks new ideas in them. So it's a pretty exciting time, even though it's challenging.
I think that that is such a good point that you've mentioned, and I'm thinking of some of my own experiences with my daughter recently. As you're mentioning that, is we often, I guess, as parents, we do think about the logistics, don't we? And we think about the practicalities of everything and what's going to work and what's not. We often tend to forget about, you know, the wonderful opportunities that are there, as you've just mentioned, for our kids to really experience things for themselves, to be able to navigate things, to build up some resilience and to just experience those different things. And I think that's, if we're not rushing and if we take our time, I think we're more likely to bring those things into the conversation, perhaps, if we're not pushing ourselves, I guess, into a corner time-wise to do these things. Is that, would you agree with that, Carolina?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I would start having the conversations a year or two before even. I mean, you're hopefully having a long time to process it because we are such deep processors. And if the parent is also an HSP, which all the parents in this group are, we all need to sort through stuff around it. Mm. So hopefully, you know, when they're going to high school, you're already having conversations about, well, this is one step, and then you're going to have another step, and you're going to see some of the same emotions come up and the same issues developmentally, and then some new ones. So just leaving the conversation open with your youth is really important too. Just knowing that they can, that you're someone they can come to when they're stressed out or starting to spin out or struggling in some way.
Yeah, well, that's the next thing I was going to mention here too, is that families are such a great source of support during these times. Yes. Obviously, the more thought we can put into these and the more prepared we can be to help our children through these times is really important. What are some other things there that perhaps families could be doing to help their young adults during these times?
That's a great question. I like to first pull back a little bit and look at sort of the developmental needs of the mm-hmm. family, because that's my lens as an early childhood specialist. I find that developmental phases often repeat themselves. And so this phase when youth are leaving the home is not entirely different than the separation individuation phases that happen when they're toddlers, and then again when they first become teens and are kind of spending more time with their friends and less time with their family. The phases are similar. And so you're going to encounter similar emotions and relational needs as you go through each phase that's similar to the last time. So my work in early childhood mental health also taught me about a theory called touch points. And touch points, the idea behind it, it's Barry Brazelton's theory. He was a famous pediatrician when I was a kid many years ago. And he talks about how the entire family goes through periods of calm, where you feel like you've kind of achieved something and you have some equilibrium. And then the little one or the young person goes into a new phase and it throws everyone off. So this is another time where that happens. So you have, just as an infant who was sleeping through the night suddenly stops sleeping through the night when they're about to crawl, say, and the parent is like, why aren't they sleeping through the night? I don't understand. They don't understand that it's related, that they go through some sort of regression and disorganization before they make this developmental leap. So your young person, as they're leaping away from home, if that's what they're doing, or into this new routine, they're going to have times where they regress. They're going to have times where they look much younger and act much younger and more emotional and just maybe more dramatic or intense. So it's important for parents to know that and not necessarily take it personally, just in the same way as you don't take a toddler's tantrum personally. You don't want to take the 18 or 20 year old's freak out too personally, just trying to stay calm. In my work as an attachment therapist, we talk a lot about being a secure base for your child. And the good news in attachment theory is that you only have to get it right 33% of the time to be a secure base for your kids. So you may not get it perfect as you're trying to help youth navigate this period. But as long as you continue to be that secure base, they are going to feel comfortable coming back to you when they're in need. So you want to find that balance, just as you have throughout their lives, of being both involved and supportive and also pulling back, because the more they start to launch and leave, that's the parents' turn to step back a little and let them figure things out on their own. And that can be really hard for parents who are very involved and really want to have their hands in everything that their youth does. I find that the best thing to do is to invite the youth to give you feedback about what kind of support they want. So maybe not in those heightened moments. I mean, you can ask, like, what do you need from me right now while you're freaking out? But to have those conversations when you're in a calm state, like, okay, in a few months, you're going to start this new routine or this new job, or you're going off to school. And how often do you want to talk to me when you leave home? How often do you want to still check in by phone about what time you'll be home at night, you know? Or now that you're an adult, you don't really need to do that. You know, you want to have those logistical conversations about how involved they want you to be. And then when you're going through the transition, when you're kind of in the thick of it, what you want to encourage them to do is just focus on the basics. So it can be overwhelming to integrate all this new information. So just making sure, you know, putting on your mom hat or your dad hat, saying, are you eating? Are you sleeping? Are you showering? Are you getting some exercise? Are you making some friends? You know, like, just trying to keep them focused on themselves. Because I know so many youth who've gone off to, say, college, or just are still living at home and working, and they get a little lost. Like, they get thrown off their routines and they're not sleeping enough. They forget to eat, or they eat too much, or they're eating, you know, fast food all the time. And so really just reminding them, being that secure base of someone who can remind them to take good care of themselves, because ultimately what you want as a parent when they launch is for them to have internalized as much of you as the parent as they can. So, like, well, my mom would want me to make sure I'm eating and make sure I'm sleeping. And so they'll be doing that for themselves, hopefully. And if they're not, then they might need you to check in with them a little more, especially in the first few months. But those are some of the needs, is just to keep in mind where they are developmentally, keep in mind the big picture, but also be there for them in a way that's comfortable for them around the logistics.
Yeah, I think that's so important, because, you know, as you've said, then just to stick with the basics when they are in the thick of actually going through all of these things, because that's a time when you know, you really don't want to be putting any more overwhelm in that scenario. And sometimes unintentionally that happens, I think, for people, and because you want to make sure that, you know, you've prepared them as much as you can, and that you've talked to them about everything that you can. And so sometimes there's this sense of a push to have to do that, I think, in a time frame. So yeah, if we do sort of step back and give ourselves a bit of time and space, I think that helps them, but it also helps us to stay calm as well. Often, I think, as parents, we have that I think innate guilt that comes with, have we done enough to prepare our kids for these moments? Have we taught them enough? Have we showed them enough? Have we done enough to prepare them for the outside world? And so we start having those doubts and uncertainties ourselves, I think, as parents.
Yeah, I always think it's a good idea for the parents to get support in addition to whatever the support they're building in for the youth, because it's a hard time for parents too.
Yeah, and I think I did make you laugh about this too, Carolina, because when we had a talk before the interview today, I remember that you brought that into the conversation about the importance of support for parents, and mm-hmm. and I the concept, because I guess we had just been so busy in doing the do and making it all happen and focusing on how it was all going to work, that was something I hadn't even thought about. You know, I was so focused on what my daughter needed and what I could have been doing to help her in that time. And so many big milestones happened for us at the end of last year, sort of all in a very short period of time. I honestly did not give myself much thought in there at all. And I don't, I think that's probably pretty common, I'd say, for a lot of parents that, you know, you just don't think about what supports you might need.
It is very common. And it's so important because you've had all this energy on your youth for 18 years or more, and you've been involved with them, and you might have been lessening your involvement a little bit as they've gotten older, but you're still very, you know, involved in their day-to-day lives. They're coming and going. And if you suddenly don't have all that, where do you focus that energy? You know, a lot of parents feel kind of lost when their youth leave the home because it's that empty nest syndrome that people talk about. Even if there's still some kids at home, it's a big shift for the parent as well. And that's why I like that touch points model too, because it's, you know, the youth is going through a big developmental leap, but that means the parents also are having to reorganize their energy and their attention. And it's a big deal. Parents who don't get support will sometimes do it, you know, you sort of implied, which is like you might put too much onto your child. Like you might be checking in on them too much. You might be trying to keep the same amount of attention on them, and it may not work for them in their new environment. So it's good to have even just someone to check with, if it's a friend or another family member, if you have a partner, to just keep processing it for yourself too.
Yeah, I think that social network, I think, is so important. We have a wonderful group of people where I am here, parents who have, we've all been there right from preschool or prep, as we now call it. So when the children first started school, we all walked them in as really, really little people, and we've all shared in their end of year formal and graduation last year. And it's wonderful that we have a core group of parents who we have been with the whole time. And that's been a great support, I think, because we've all shared in the ups and downs, we've shared in the challenges, we've been able to talk to one another, and we have a lot of highly sensitive people within that group, which is probably why we all get on so well. Having that support in community, I think, is really, really important. There was one thing that we mentioned before, and that was uncertainty. For our young people, if they don't have a pathway mapped out, they haven't been able to step into full-time work, and they haven't followed a path of full-time study. So they are still at home and they are still here in the community, and they're finding work, and they might be doing part-time study, or they're doing casual or part-time work, because it's very rare here anyway in Australia for young people to step straight into full-time work. The uncertainty comes in where there's no more school, so there's no more structure in their day. And when they're not at their jobs, or when they're not doing that part-time studying, the question is literally, what are they doing? And they can see themselves a little lost. And I think that brings self-doubt. It brings confidence levels down. They might start to feel like, well, you know, they can see other kids around them that have that pathway mapped out, and they've gone off to do their four-year uni course, or they've stepped straight into a family business, or, you know, they have an apprenticeship or traineeship, something like that. And it does create a sense of, you know, well, have I made the right choices? Do I really know what I'm doing? And so, yeah, that can lead to all of those sorts of things. So are there any sort of external supports in there that I guess kids and parents might be able to turn to if they are feeling that disconnect from the structure of school?
Definitely. Yeah, ideally there's other parts of their community that they can connect with. So There might be a counselor in the community, a teacher or a former teacher who can help support them. A lot of people like to engage in sort of, in school they were extracurricular activities, but maybe it becomes more of a livelihood or a pastime as they get older. Maybe it's a sport or some kind of hobby or club, an outdoor club, a hiking club, things like that. Brené Brown talks a lot about our need for belonging. And generally, we focus, at least in the United States, more on what we're doing rather than where we belong and who we belong to. And so I love that other cultures focus more on being part of a community and less on what you're doing. Because the truth is, even the ones who have it mapped out, whether it's a four-year college or a vocational program, they're still going to encounter a lot of questions and maybe a lot of changes. I mean, I personally have had three different careers in my life. I thought I had it mapped out and it changed when I was 25, all of a sudden. So things change. And what you want to focus on is whether they feel they belong somewhere, whether they feel like they're contributing in some meaningful way to them. And if they're not feeling like they're contributing in some meaningful way, talking to a counselor or a mentor or a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle to really search for that guidance in their lives. So search for that thing that sparks meaning for them. It could be a project in their community. It could be local government. It could be a million things. It could be something online that they find. It could be the sensitive empowerment community. Who knows? But it could be, the key is that you want to help them find somewhere where they belong. And hopefully their work or their school is that place, but there's often a need for subgroups in there as well. So an activity, friend group, something like that.
Yeah.
Can I answer your questions?
Yeah, it's so important, I think, to have that sense of belonging, because particularly when kids can feel a little bit lost in that time. And I guess one of the things that I know a lot of parents ask, and you probably get asked this a lot, Carolina, in your line of work, if you find these things that you feel would be really helpful, and you find these external supports, and you find these on perhaps online communities, and we can see how that may benefit a young person or our child. I guess, how do we identify and match up what might be the right tools to use, and then encourage our kids to actually step into those things and give them a go?
Yeah, this is such a classic parent dilemma for this age, because we do have so much wisdom to share, right? We have so much experience, and we want to impart all our wisdom on our kids or our mentees or our God kids. And it's twofold. So one is, making some suggestions and then pulling that energy back, because it's a therapist's best tool is really sort of the non-attachment or non-judgmental, like, well, have you tried this or tried that? Like, it doesn't matter to me if you try it, but have you thought of these things? So just sort of approaching them with as little intensity as possible when you do give them suggestions of things to do. What I like to do in my work and with the young people in my life is to inquire more. So I think if we ask them questions like, well, what kind of things are really important to you? What kind of things do you love? What is your favorite? If you could do anything in the entire world, what would it be? Like, how would you spend your day? And what makes you the most excited when you think about it? And then if you can get answers to those questions, then your suggestions might be a little more on target or more in line with what they're thinking, because you might be thinking of some, academic thing they can try, when they really, they've always loved who knows, hiking. And there's a hiking club on campus, and they were just kind of nervous to try it, but maybe that's the thing they need to do to feel like they belong and to feel excited. And maybe that will lead them to a career in environmentalism. I mean, who knows? You know, there's so many, that's why it's such a rich and exciting time, is that there's so many possibilities. And you spoke earlier about that desire to sort of overload our kids with information. I mean, not that we want to overload them, but just we have so many things to share. But what they really need, especially in this time, again, in the same way a toddler needs to sort of learn how to stand on their own and walk and fall, you know, they need us to just be there, you know, and say, great job when you're doing great. And do you want help, or do you want me to just watch, or do I need to let them struggle a little bit? That's the hardest thing, I think, as parents, is watching them struggle a little bit. And there certainly is a line where if they're really struggling and their mental health is suffering, you need to step in and be more directive. But these are the questions that we had to grapple with as young people leaving our families, and they similarly have to grapple with them. So just reminding ourselves of that. And again, inquiring more than telling is a key intervention, I find, to get to what's important to them.
When my daughter and I have been able to share a wonderful day out together, and we have just, we've forgotten about everything else. We've forgotten about, how the petrol and the car insurance is going to be paid because there's not enough hours this week with the work shifts. We've forgotten about all of that practical stuff, and we've just gone out and enjoyed ourselves for the day, and we haven't had those conversations, and we haven't, those worries and stresses have not been there. And I think we always come back from having that time together, and you tend to find solutions more easily when you're not full of stress and you're not full of worries.
Yes.
And when you can sit down and you can have those conversations, and there's, we've always been able to work through things, I think, in a better way when we've had that time out to mm-hmm. just enjoy each other's company and not stress about the small stuff, even though, you know, that's big stuff to kids. These, you know, when they're starting out, they need to know that they're independent, and they need to know that they can pay for things, and that instills all that confidence. But I've just found that those conversations are easier and solutions present themselves more easily when we've had that sort of time away. Is that something you find with people too?
Definitely. I mean, I think if you look at the brain science of what you're talking about, you may not have known you were talking about brain science, but you know, our problem solving area of our brain is the prefrontal cortex. That's where we come up with solutions. That's where we problem solve. That's where we question. But when we're stressed, we're in the lower parts of our brain. We're in the amygdala. We might even be in the brainstem. You know, if we're really stressed and running a lot of adrenaline, we're not able to think. We're not able to bring our wisdom online. And so what can often happen, what is a tendency for many of us as HSP parents, is we start to get stressed and we're able to problem solve. And so we're throwing solutions at the problem, but what our young person needs to learn is how to do that for themselves. And so what I always come back to, and it goes back to my early childhood foundations, my attachment therapy, is we need to be that secure base for them, which is a calm, centered, grounded person that they can bounce things off of. We don't need to do it for them. And that's a huge temptation for us, because many of us are perfectionists and we have all the answers and we want to fix everything and make it okay. But our kids need to learn how to develop their own problem-solving skills. They've been doing this, you know, throughout their lives, but even as they enter into early adulthood, they're still developing their brains. They're still developing that prefrontal cortex. They're still learning. So we have to give them the opportunity to do that and to sort of struggle through it on their own, even if it's hard for us. And again, there's a line of struggle where you start to worry about their mental health, and that's when you get, some professional help. But most of the time, a lot of what they're struggling with is just, it's hard because it's a big life lesson, it's a big life transition. And so they're going to come out stronger if they're allowed to sort of bounce ideas off you and then go try things on their own.
Yeah.
I love what you were saying about being in that calm state, because that is exactly, you were in that grounded, calm state. You were that secure base for her. You were just enjoying her, which is what parents and children do together when you're both in that calm, alert state. And so that is when solutions come up, and that is what builds resilience as well for those stressful times. It's like we fuel up on that, and then we can go back out and try again, if there was a problem we have to face.
Yeah, I think too, sometimes with parenting, I guess it depends on the type of parenting too that the child has grown up with. And I know for myself personally, as a single parent, being the main parent that was there all the time, sometimes you want to be there, and you feel sometimes that even if it's unintentional, I think sometimes there is that overcompensation. And perhaps then you ask, well, have I done a bit too much here? Should I have stepped back a bit more? And then you start asking yourself those questions too. So I think, but that's an interesting dynamic too with single parents, is that I think sometimes you want to be everything for your children. And sometimes I guess you can unintentionally maybe feel like you've done a little bit too much, but I think everybody does the best that they can, and I think we tend to worry, but most of the time our kids grow up to be vibrant, wonderful, confident young people when they can work through these times of transition. So
yes.
yeah and things can turn out really well for them. So I think if we enjoy that time as much as we can, I think that's the best that we can all do, I think, to be there for our kids. So yeah. Is there any other sort of supports, Carolina, before we go on to some chat questions? Are there any other sort of supports that perhaps you might hints or tips that you might like to give people?
Absolutely. I mean, there's both formal and informal supports that are important to take advantage of. So most people know that therapy, coaching, counseling are all helpful. But some people aren't comfortable with that, and they find less formal options like activity groups or church groups, wellness classes, or even self-help books if they're really introverted, online groups like the Sensitive Empowerment Community. One thing we haven't spoken about too much, well, at all today, but that I know we talk a lot about in the community, are LGBTQ youth who are going through multiple transitions at once. They're sort of discovering more of their identity. They're discovering their purpose in life. They may be linked together. They may feel like they still have to be somewhat separate. So if you're dealing with a specific big identity struggle, it's important, I think, to get both professional help and very specific groups of help. Like, it's even more important to have that village around a youth who is dealing with multiple levels of questioning who they are and what they want to do with their lives. So I often find that the online groups, especially since COVID, are really great places to start. But if there are groups in your community or on your campus, it's important to link your youth up with those as well, so that they have extra support to really blossom into all of the facets of who they are. And that can go with big identity questions. It can also go with big interests. If there's if you have an artist and you really want to connect your youth to artists on campus or theater groups on campus or something like that, you want to, just try to get specific as you can and linking them to the things that are going to support them the most.
Such an important topic. I think maybe we should perhaps have another couple of events with perhaps some more specific things that we haven't perhaps had time to talk about in a lot of detail just in our time here today. A question here from Becca. Is mental illness more prominent in certain ages of young people? That is a really, really good question.
I'm not completely familiar with the data on that. I think there's growing awareness of mental health issues in a lot of different communities. What I want to be wary of in answering Becca's question is stigmatizing any particular group. I think it's important not to do that and to normalize that mental health struggles are something that many people go through. Certainly, the more you're dealing with in terms of the complexity of your life and your history, the more likely you are to struggle with mental health issues. So, for example, if you have a history of trauma, if you have a history of not being accepted by your family for whatever reason, those are all risk factors. So I tend to look more at risk factors than I do at certain populations, because even in the LGBTQ, there are some statistics out there that say that they're more likely to have a mental health disorder or more likely to think about suicide. And that makes some LGBTQ youth feel like there's something wrong with them because it's more common in that population. But I know a lot of LGBTQ youth who are very well accepted by their family and don't have mental health issues. And so that's why I'm wary of attributing mental health issues to a certain population. I more look at it as, have you had adverse situations in your life? And have you had support to get through them? And how deep are your wounds from those life experiences, rather than stigmatizing a certain population? Because even people who've been through a lot, part of what happens to us, say if we have a history of trauma, which I personally do, you go through a lot of your life growing up thinking there's something wrong with you. And that brings you a lot more stigma and mental health problems than just knowing, wow, I've been through a lot and I'm really strong. And when you get reflected back to your strength and your gifts and you feel empowered, that is healing for people. So I hope that I think I saw Becca's chat come up. I just want to double check if I answered the question. Okay. So does that help, Becca? I'm not seeing a response. Okay. And then another question here.
Carol's asking, what are helpful ways to transition back and forth from holiday breaks when our young adults are home from university? I have found mine needs a lot of rest and quiet coming off finals and big weeks full of testing and pressure. I'm learning how important quiet rest is for us as HSPs at all ages. So that's a really good question there.
That's a great question. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I would have you check in with your youth about that, because it certainly isn't universal, but I can say that if they are coming home from school where they just had finals or something like that, they are coming off of a very stressful time. And so they're going to need ways to de-stress. I used to sleep like 14 hours a day when I came home from college. It was, my whole break was spent sleeping, it felt like. I couldn't even like go see my friends, but they might also want to see any friends who are still home, or if there's other friends who are on break who are coming back, they might want to get together with their friends and just feel that reconnection from their past. And then whatever sort of self-care that you and your youth can decide on together, I say is the first priority. And then anything fun, which could be considered self-care, but also could be a little tiring for us as HSPs, that would come second. So I generally lean on focus on what you need for self-care first after coming back from a stressful situation, and then look at what you might need to do to have fun. And I would say generally as parents, you know, that's our time to, I mean, we've been hopefully talking to them on the phone or on Zoom or whatever while they've been away, but we also, I mean, that they're right in front of us. So it's prime time to really get to know who they are now that they've been away for however many months that they've been away, because they've changed. And if you're curious about that and want to know kind of what their lives have been like and see the changes that you might not have seen on Zoom or over the phone, it's an exciting time to reunite with your youth too.
Okay, so I think that one answers that really well. And we've just got another question here. What additional supports are needed for youth as a result of the pandemic? Wow. Yeah.
The result of the pandemic. Well, that's a great question. There's so many. I think at least the youth in my life that I'm aware of, they're needing to find this balance of kind of being able to engage in the world again and engage in whatever track they were on before the pandemic, because it halted things for a lot of young people. I knew some people who were in college for their first or their second year and then had to go home, and then couldn't go back for a year or 2 years in some cases. So it's really, they need support in feeling like they're getting back on track and finishing things. A lot of them have taken longer to finish school or to find employment because of the pandemic and the way it's interrupted our lives. But there's also been some opportunities in it. The Zoom explosion that came with the pandemic has been amazing for online communities that didn't exist before, weren't as popular before. It's also an opportunity for many entrepreneurs. If you have a young person who wants to start a business, they can often do it online now instead of having to have a brick and mortar office or store. So, but I'd say generally, in terms of mental health supports, I think most people that I'm aware of in this age group struggled to some degree with the pandemic. I mean, we all did. It impacted many of our feelings of depression and isolation and anxiety. So we need to make sure that if there's residual impacts from that, that they're getting support, professional support, I would say, around that, and also finding as many opportunities to engage with people in person as possible. I mean, there are some people, and I'm one of them, who, you know, didn't mind the pandemic because I'm an introvert. I mean, I didn't like the pandemic, obviously, but I liked the fact that we didn't have to leave our house and we didn't have to make plans with people. That was in some ways a gift for some of us who are introverts and HSPs. So I think there are some young people who I've come across who felt the same way and were happy to have that time off, but then are having a really hard time re-engaging in the world. So it just depends on your youth, and it's important to keep checking in with them and what they might need related to the pandemic. Again, keeping the conversation open, even just asking your youth, like, you know, it's been a few years now that the pandemic has, you know, in theory been going away and we've been able to re-engage in the world, but what's that been like for you? You know, like, because we don't often have those conversations with our kids. We get stuck in the day-to-day. So just kind of pulling back and getting a little more philosophical with them is important sometimes to see where they're at.
Okay, we have another question here. Any suggestions on how to help a child 11 years old who worries about what others think, so judgments, to try things or to stay in an activity they are in and keep going despite being scared?
That's a great question. Without knowing the specific youth, I don't want to give too much specific advice, but I would say generally young, highly sensitive people who are, it sounds like they're having trouble staying engaged in a certain activity. It's a fine line. It's important to figure out what is best for their well-being. Some kids do need to pull out of some activities in order to be more emotionally healthy and comfortable in their lives. But there's a line at which, you know, you don't want to overindulge their fears, especially if you think they can do it and it's an activity that's good for them. I've actually written a whole blog on this on my website, the Walking the Line, if you want to check it out on my resources page. But that is a complicated issue. It's true for this age group that we're talking about today too, is that they may want to just sit in their room and not do anything, but you know, we want more for them than that. And so how do we balance their individual needs with our expectations and what we think might be good for them, especially if they're not on board? So it's a tricky one. Sometimes it's just a process of trial and error, to be honest, that you say, well, let's try this for 2 more months. And if you're still really unhappy in 2 months, then you can quit that activity. But in the meantime, let's just see if you learn anything from it, if there's anything good about it at all, if there's any way that you feel you've grown because of it, you know, let's revisit it, but keep trying. Unless they're really suffering.
Yeah, definitely. I'll just read out another. We've just got a few more questions here to get through before we finish. So this one here, what's a good way to encourage our introverted HSP young adults to branch out more, to meet more people when they live at home? That is a great question.
Yeah, I think it's similar to what we were talking about before, is kind of inquiring of them what around their interests and what's important to them, and then trying to connect with other people who have those things in common. So whether it's a church group or an activity group or a group at their school, I think it's important that introverts build in time after their activity and maybe before as well to sort of decompress from it. So we might have that conversation with them. Like, I know it's extra hard for you because you're an introvert to kind of get out there and do these things, but it can, you know, if you find this group of people that's exciting for you to be around, and then you build in time afterwards that's downtime or you don't see anybody for a few hours or maybe a day, is it more manageable that way? Because I think a lot of us think in all or nothing or very black and white terms, like, well, I have to just get out there and pretend I'm an extrovert all the time. And it's like, no, you could do one thing a week and that would be a big deal, you know, and take the rest of the week to recover and focus on your other, you know, aspects of your life. But just trying to find a way that is manageable for them so that they don't just sort of use their introversion as you know, to avoid social interaction, because even introverts appreciate and need social interaction with people. So it's important for them to get it too, just in a way that's more manageable.
I've just read a really heartfelt message here, Carolina. Listening to this helps me give my younger self the self-compassion and validation I didn't get as a young adult. Thank you. So that's very, very heartfelt.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that.
Wonderful validation, Carolina, for us introverts, that we can build in downtime and pace ourselves. And that is an act of self-love. Yeah, very, very true. Very true. Well, Carolina, it has been such a pleasure having you here with us today and sharing all of your expertise and hints and tips and practical knowledge for us. So if you would like to connect with Carolina personally, if you'd like to chat with her or look into the wonderful work that she does, you can visit her website, which is butterflygrove.com. And is there anything else, Carolina, you want to add just before we go?
Oh, thank you. No, I'll just say that the resources page of my website has almost weekly blogs, videos, something is on there every week. And so you can scroll through and look at different topics to read about or see a video about. And if you sign up for my mailing list, there is a free gift that you get, which is a 90-minute webinar on parenting sensitive kids. So I know many of you listening have your kids are no longer kids, quote unquote, but you might still enjoy it. So I look forward to seeing you on my website.
Well,
and
that
seeing
is...
you again in the sensitive empowerment community, of course. I'm available to all of you there as well.
And we'll put all those links below too in the write-up for this, Carolina. We'll have all of those links there as well. And I also, I made a note of that blog post that you mentioned before, Walking the Line. I'm going to go back and have a look at that because I think that would be really, a really interesting read. So thank you so much, Carolina, for being with us. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. And we will see you all for our next event next time. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone.